Welcome to the Fansmanship.com podcast, coming to you from San Luis Obispo, California.
Where you stand?
LA living grid locked in the fast lane. Trying to strike a rich match, play my cash game.
Welcome to an all-new Burn the Breeze edition of the Fansmanship.com podcast. It's Owen Main here, along with Nick Wynn. Nick, what's happening?
Not much. How's it going?
You know, it's going okay. I guess it's been better if you're a Cal Poly fan, but in general, it's going, you know, pretty decent.
Yeah, it's been, if you're a Big West fan, it's been exciting. If you're a Cal Poly fan, you're probably ready for the season to be over.
So. I don't know about, let's not get crazy, but yeah, I mean, definitely... It was a rough week for the Mustangs, but man, the Big West is just so much fun, and there's a lot to talk about all around the conference. So where would you like to start today, Mr. Wynn?
Well, let's talk about, since I did make the trip down to go see Cal Poly play, let's talk about Poly's last two games against Irvine and Northridge.
At the site of the All-Valley Tournament, the Matadome, where the Karate Kid beat Johnny to win the tournament with like a, I don't know, I feel like his back was broken. I'm not sure if Mr. Miyagi had the proper certification to be, you know, he's no Crystal Slover, that's for sure. But
No, absolutely. Yeah.
But they made it happen. So last year I went down to the CSUN game. It was one of the first non-Santa Barbara Big West road games that I've taken, maybe the first one. CSUN's usually pretty close, and I was going to go to this game, but the road was closed in Santa Barbara.
Yes.
Reopened today on a Monday as we tape this. Maybe reopened last night even, but definitely was reopened by the commute this morning. Last season, I think Don Fields, Cuba Nijo, and Hank Hollingsworth were kind of the three stars of that game. If I remember right, I think Cuba hit maybe like four or five threes. Don hit a couple. I think Pauly probably had 12 to 15 as a team in that game. Hank Hollingsworth really controlled the middle defensively against CSUN. He was kind of a revelation in that game defensively, and even got a couple of, a couple of good buckets inside. It was one of those games where you saw Hank and you go, oh man, you know, maybe, you know, Hank looks like he's developing here into, you know, into a guy. And Cuba too, you know, in terms of taking open shots and making them and, you know, kind of having confidence. This season, it was kind of a complete 180 from how that game went. Last year, everything fell for the Mustangs. This season at the Matadome, and you were there in person, it was like there was a can, you know, something blocking the rim, whether it was the force or what. I'm not sure.
Which is weird because, as you mentioned, last year, even going back, I have to go back and look, but I get the impression that Cal Poly's always actually really shot fairly well in Northridge. You know, they seem to have to play well in that gym, but yeah, on Saturday the shots just were not falling, and as you mentioned, unlike last year, Hank Hollingsworth barely played. Cuba Nijo, who that we're not sure if he's hurt or what's going on, he did not play against Irvine. He came in for kind of mop-up duty against Northridge.
He got like
he's
a
not
minute.
Limping. Yeah. He doesn't have a cast on. So you get the impression that maybe it's some kind of coach's decision or that kind of thing. But he hardly played against Northridge and, again, did not play against Irvine. And the team could have definitely used him in both those games, at least in my opinion, because of his outside shot, which did not fall in either one of those games. So it's a really weird situation in terms of how the lineup is being constructed and the rotation that Joe is playing right now.
Yeah, it's been an interesting couple of weeks, really since the Santa Barbara win. Cal Poly has really kind of tried to shuttle guys in and out in the two games after that. Hank talked about after the Fullerton game, when he said, I think that was a Fullerton game, that he set a career and Cal Poly record for blocks in a game. I think he had like 7 blocks in 14 minutes or something silly like that. But he was able to really, you know, do what he needed to do there. And at the same time, we saw you know, a lot of guys kind of shuttling in and out as Joe tried to find that kind of comeback lineup that was going to work for them. But really, once you get behind by double digits in the first half, every single game, it starts to wear on you, I think, as a team. And at some point, I think Joe has a way that he wants to play, and he has a roster construction that he built this team for, and something in mind in terms of how this team was going to play. And I guess, to his credit, if you have something that you believe in and you're constantly going away from it just to kind of pull out a win here and there, you're always going to be kind of chasing your tail. And
sure.
And so, you know, it seems, and again, you know, without having talked to him in a week or two, it seems like Joe said, okay, you know, here are the guys who are the most experienced, the oldest guys, the guys who are going to get us into and out of, you know, maybe a slump here. We're gonna roll with these guys. We're gonna roll with, you know, Luke Meikle and Josh Martin. Getting high usage. We're gonna sacrifice maybe a little bit of Don and Vic usage early on. And kind of make that work. And really, that's probably the scout on Cal Poly at this point, is to kind of run Don and Vic off the 3-point line, have a lot of help in there. And you saw Cal Poly try to throw a bunch of lobs to Hank against Northridge that Northridge just wasn't biting on. And it seemed like, yeah, that kind of mid-range floater that both Don and Vic actually have were just being totally totally ignored as they tried to get Hank, you know, some lob dunks that never came. And as far as Kuba goes, you know, they have a lineup and a certain number of guys, it seems like, right now that they're rolling with. And that doesn't mean it can't change either. I mean, Kuba, you know, was their high scorer, I think, in the College of Charleston game, or at least he was one of the two high scorers. He was, you know, deadly shooting in that Great Alaska Shootout. He was, you know, he was very good overall and started the season really hot, and he is a good shooter. But it's interesting to see kind of the ebb and flow of guys as the season goes on. And it's something that, again, I talk about liking college sports because, you know, things change over time, but I guess they can change both ways, both in terms of how much a coach is willing to trust somebody and how much a guy is putting forth in practice to get to the point where they can play in the game. Maybe it's a message to not take things for granted. I don't know. I'm totally speculating because I have no idea.
It could be not something that's discipline related either, too. Maybe,
totally.
Maybe he's had the flu. Maybe totally. He's been sick. Unfortunately, right. You know, there wasn't both games were on ESPN3, and I didn't see the game on Saturday, but at least on Thursday, it wasn't really mentioned by the announcers on ESPN3.
So, no. And to those guys' credit, they do a good job, but in terms of little nuanced things and, like who's playing a lot, you know, who's been super successful, you know, they're looking at the points per game numbers from, you know, recent sure. games and so forth. So, you know, you can't take a
and
ton.
And I don't
of,
necessarily know that having Kuba out there on the floor for either one of those games was the big decider. Cal Poly probably loses those games, both those games, if he does play and he is 100%. But I think it would have at least been helpful, given the fact that that kind of his strength is being outside shot, and that was the thing that was elusive for Cal Poly in both of those games, was making shots from the outside. So. Yeah. Yeah. It was a weirdly, really weird, you know, this is the second time I've seen the team in person. Obviously the Stanford game was the first game of the season, so you can't really draw a lot of inference from that. And they're playing Stanford and so on and so forth, but it was a really weird vibe with this team. Even when they were getting down multiple, you know, by double digits, it never seemed like the guys were very frustrated. It never seemed like they were, you know, let's be honest, Cal State Northridge isn't very good. And even if you're playing them on the road, that's probably a game that a decent team in the Big West should win. And I never got the impression that the guys were particularly upset. And I don't know that doesn't sound bad. It's not like they were happy that they were losing. But then it didn't seem like there was a lot of frustration. To be honest, the only person on that bench that was extremely frustrated, and you could tell was extremely frustrated, was Joe Calero. And so I don't know if this, you know, obviously they had the huge comebacks against UCSB and Fullerton. I don't know what the mentality is with this team right now. Maybe it's a good thing where they feel like they can come back with anything, and that's why they weren't as frustrated as they were. But I was surprised for them to be down by as much as they were against Northridge, especially in the first half, to not see that kind of intensity from the team. It was kind of like they were just expecting to turn it around, or they were expecting to go home.
Well, there's this level of, you know, you use the word frustrated, but I think the word intensity or kind of channeling that level of, hey, this isn't going right, and channeling it into something is something that as a fan, you want to kind of see a guy kind of get that death look in his eyes when something like that's happening. And on TV, you could kind of see guys reacting. You could see frustration on social media over the last week. You know, there's been some frustration, not with anything in particular, just like, you know, things that people are saying, like literally like super frustrated and, you know, pictures of them in the gym taking shots at, you know, after midnight when they got back from Northridge. There was some video of that, you know, guys sitting. It was like a guy's feet. I forget who it was even, but it was like a guy's feet, like he was going to go get shots up when they got home kind of thing.
Well, that's good.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Joe said it on the ESPN game. He said, these are high character guys, but they got to figure out how to play as a team right now. And yeah. To your point about you know, frustration, I think I'm always, or I used to be anyway, and I'll tell you who got me out of it in a minute, but I used to be, you know, when I would watch a game, I'd be like, man, why isn't that guy more frustrated? And after a game, I'd talk to some of these Cal Poly guys and they'd be like, you know, yeah, we just got to, you know, figure it out and everything's okay. And I'd be like, you know, as a fan, you're sitting there going like, yeah. how can you be this mellow and mature and whatever? And the guy who figured out how to be a good in a good in-between place was, you know, one of the better players since I've been covering Cal Poly, and that's Chris Eversley, who was actually at the CSUN game, you know, yep. taking it all in with, I think, Jamal Johnson and Will Taylor, among others, yep. In the house, you know, Cal Poly alums who are going to, you know, come back and support the team. But Chris, I can remember like a specific press conference. I don't remember the exact words, but I remember the look on his face. And I said, you know, what's next? And it was after the UCSB game. And Joe tells the story all the time. You know, they lost by, I think, 20 to UCSB and came back and beat them by 30 the next week in the conference tournament. And I said, you know, what do you do now, Chris? And he goes, well, I still think we can be good. And until they rip this jersey off me, until the final, you know, buzzer sounds, then that's what I'm going to keep believing and thinking. And I remember thinking to myself, like, for a 22 or 23-year-old, however old he was at the time, to, like, have that perspective and to have that maturity, even before they went on that tournament run, I remember thinking to myself how, like, impressive that was, because, you know, I was probably, like, 31 at the time and going, like, oh, my gosh, like, is this guy for real? Like, yeah. he's way more mature than I am, and, I got 8 years on him or whatever. And that's, I guess, you know, I think if there's one constant, I guess, in terms of who Cal Poly recruits, it's guys who can probably handle adversity. It's probably guys who can, you know, maintain a mellow kind of attitude through it all. But to your point, Nick, I think as fans, sometimes it's not satisfying when a team loses in general, but it you know, then you say, man, you know, the question is always, you know, if I see a baseball player like, you know, Cody Bellinger or Adrian Gonzalez, you know, strike out for the fifth straight time and they're walking back to the dugout with the same damn look on their face, it sometimes can be frustrating, right? Sure. But the point is, those guys do care, and those guys are probably maintaining a healthier outlook on it all than I ever could.
Absolutely.
And so
I think the thing that I was more disappointed about was that I you would hope that Pauly would feel like they're better than Northridge, and they you know, honestly, they're probably not,
and have a chip and probably, a swagger, you know, about, so
talked
it.
About they're right. Kind of that same level, but you know, I think if UCSB had been down there and been down by 20, they would have been upset because they would have known that they were better. And I think you know, unfortunately, it's starting to sink in that's probably the level that Cal Poly is at, and so that's kind of a bummer to see in person. It's different to see it in person than it is to watch it on TV or on the web stream or that kind of thing. But yeah, I think that's kind of where we're at, where, you know, Pauly and Northridge and Riverside, those are the three teams at the bottom, and they're just not good enough to be up there with those six teams at the top.
Yeah. You know, there's definitely that kind of 6-3, you know, drop off at this point. That doesn't mean that one of the three couldn't beat one of the six. We saw it happen with what we think is the best team probably in the Big West when Cal Poly beat Santa Barbara, and it took kind of a freak play, but it could happen. And as we look at this,
and we're only 5 games into the season.
I mean, it's
16 games. Did you read? Who knows?
Did you, not to plug my own stuff, but I wrote an article, posted it yesterday, about, If each Big West team was a WWE wrestler or WWF wrestler from the early 90s. And so it was a tweet originally, and then I thought I'd flesh it out a little bit, and and write it up. And it really kind of fit, you know, things started kind of falling into place as time went on.
Sure. But you made good cases for each one of those.
I think so. You know, I think so. And I think when you, if you pay attention to any of those teams, there's something about each of those wrestlers that definitely matches with the team that, that they're, you know, that they're kind of, lined up against. And so, you know, for Cal Poly, you know, this kind of six man cage match that's happening at the top, unfortunately for Poly and Riverside and CSUN, you know, that idea about being there right at the end is sinking in. But, you know, in terms of being the overall, you know, regular season champ, the thing is, though, in one of those cage matches, it only takes three wins at the end. And so, you know, who knows what could happen depending on who gets in. But right now, I think when you're talking about all three of those teams, you're really talking about a fight to get into the conference, you know, playoffs. Yeah. You don't want to be ninth in this league right now. You know, if you're Cal Poly, you don't want to be ninth to a team like Riverside, who started the conference 0-5. You don't want to be ninth to a team like CSUN, who was bottom 10 in the country last before Cal Poly played them via KenPom. You know, possibly the worst like KenPom ranking loss that Cal Poly's maybe ever had.
Only had two Division I wins coming into the game.
Right, so. And that doesn't count the Division II loss to, I think, Cal State Monterey Bay. Maybe that was Joe's first year. That was
No. I was talking about Northridge only had two Division I wins coming into the game. Yeah, and into the they beat Morgan State, who's also not very good, and then obviously they had the win against Riverside. So
you know, CSUN could be on the rise. You never know. I mean, CSUN has always had talent, but to your point, you know, definitely a disappointing road loss for the Mustangs. They look to bounce back this week. There's a home game, I believe, against Long Beach State on Thursday night, which will be interesting to see. We'll talk about Long Beach in a second. And then they go to UC Davis. So no rest for the weary in this year's Big West. And if those guys are going to, you know, continue to, you know, stay close and give themselves a chance to win, they really do have to flush that one and shake it off. And maybe, you know, I guess the silver lining is, you know, they can't shoot that bad every game. And the shots that they were getting, Nick, to the point of process, I guess, is that those shots weren't bad shots, most of them. The thing that I look for, and it's a real easy thing to look for if you're a fan, is are those shots coming on swing passes? Just like one man away. In other words, you swung the ball around and there's maybe a guy kind of on you, and it's maybe that you have to turn at kind of 90 degrees from where you catch the pass to shoot the ball, because those aren't just good shots. And they took a few of those last game. Versus, is it penetration? Is it a driving kick? Is it a post up that you kick? Do you dump it down to the post and he looks opposite and kicks it out to that guy who's catching the ball, where the ball's kind of more coming to you from closer to the hoop in terms of the angle? And those are the ones that man, you just love if you're a shooter, when the ball kind of pops out to you like they do in the shooting machines, you know, that you see in the corner of Mott Athletic Center, you know, those shooting machines with the big nets that you can set up and they just pop the ball straight out to you. Those are the kinds of shots that shooters love, and Cal Poly was getting those too, and they weren't making any of them. The pick and pop wasn't working for Luke. The pick and roll, you know, and shooting off the dribble or shooting off transition wasn't working for Vic. Don was getting some, you know, decent looks and not hitting. Marcellus was taking a few early ones, but you know, overall just nobody could make a shot. And as that kind of grinds on you a little bit more over time, you know, they didn't really have any other answers for ways to get buckets aside from, you know, Josh Martin 15 footers, which, you know, to his credit, he's you know, done pretty well on in terms of efficiency. It's not the greatest shot in the world if you're kind of just thinking about it. But him and Luke both kind of live on that, you know, 12 to 18 foot kind of range in terms of being able to put it up from anywhere if you got it open. And they've put in the time, you know, in the gym to make that be a high percentage shot for them, I guess. But in general, you know, again, just kind of an interesting way to go down for a team that I thought was, you know, a very good three-point shooting team, and still maybe what I was getting to get back to my point, I guess, is because, you know, we sometimes have points on this podcast, is that if they shot that bad, one of these games they're going to get those shots and shoot better. And one of these games they're going to get those good shots and they're going to go 15 for 25 again. Go ahead.
When they were beating College of Charleston, when they beat UCSB in that stretch at home, when they were shooting 50% from three, Right. You know, I was Debbie Downer and said, look, they can't maintain that all year. On the other hand, you know, this weekend, I think they went 10 for 43 from three. They're a better shooting team than that.
And the last 2 weeks, I think since the, you know, since the UCSB game, you know, they're not really shooting great. Even the Fullerton game, just kind of late Vic threes.
It's going to regress to the mean, and they're going to have a couple of games where they are going to shoot better. And then I think that's, you know, that they need that in order to win. Like you mentioned about, you know, that's kind of the key to their offense. And so, it's not hopeless, and you know that things are going to even out eventually. It's just a matter of how quickly are they going to even out, and when they do even out, is it going to be enough for them to win?
To overtake a team like UC Davis that has such a dominant, player in Chima Moneki, Long Beach State, who has Gabe Levin and company just playing out of their mind. Gabe Levin has always been an intriguing guy to me. And I'm interested to see him in person. I feel like he's been hurt maybe once or twice, or maybe not at full strength. He's just a monster dude in terms of his size, and he's kind of sneaky quick. He's kind of a Big West version. I'll put it this way. He's kind of a Big West version of Kevin Love when Kevin Love was in college. I really kind of liken those two guys to each other in their respective conference, that Gabe can score from, I think, just about anywhere on the court. He can shoot threes a little bit. He's a strong rebounder. He's going to be kind of sneaky and get angles and make it just so frustrating for guys like Hank, I think, and Josh or Luke or whoever's guarding him. And Cal Poly's big issue, while we're talking about all their offensive stuff and their offensive woes, teams keep shooting 50% plus against them on a regular basis. Yeah. And if they really want to improve and give themselves a shot, they have to have halves where they hold teams to like 33% from the field, or, you know, games where they hold teams to 40-45% from the field, at least, you know, for them to have a chance. And they just haven't found that defensive lineup. And you know, to the point about the lineups earlier, you know, the guys who are out there are guys who defensive rebound. They're guys who clean up possessions. They're guys who, you know, do a good job of a lot of those parts, even if the other team's scoring on them from time to time. I think those are, you know, important things for Joe, is to not give teams extra shots at it. And the guys who are playing, whether it's, you know, Mark Crow or Luke Meikle actually has a really good defensive rebounding percentage the last time I looked, relative to other players on the team and relative to other players in the country. What from the Big West? Let's transition to big picture Big West, because there's just so much happening that I want to talk about. This top six thing is really coming to fruition, Nick. This idea that the top six teams in the conference are all basically a toss-up every week, and you're always going to get like four or five games a weekend between all of them. And so,
yeah, exactly.
You know, if there's only three teams that aren't in the top six, then, you know, at least one game every night, if not three games, you know, could be in that range of those guys playing each other. And not to mention, some of those Cal Poly games are pretty great to watch so far this year too. Even in losing to Fullerton, that was a pretty awesome game. The Hawaii game was a little bit brutal, but close nonetheless. What are some things that stick out to you from this past weekend?
You know, I still think that Davis and Santa Barbara are you know, the leaders in the conference, but like we talked about, any of those six teams could win. I was really, I thought UCSB played really well against Irvine at home on Saturday. Heidegger did not have a good game, but they were still able to win, which I think is an important part for them. You know, they have a lot of weapons, but thus far, Max Heidegger's kind of been their key, their go-to guy.
And Canty, not play Canty well. Keeps playing huge too. I mean, against the Irvine team, you got to have good. Against the Irvine team, you got to have a four and a five man who are going to play big, because they're going to play Rutherford and, you know, like Brad Green at the same freaking time. Yeah. You know, you got to have two guys who can hold their own. And UCSB certainly has that in Canty and Leland Green in terms of, you know, kind of bringing it.
I was really intrigued by their win. And they were down for a little bit in that game and managed to come back. So I thought that was a good win for them. I actually was also the UC Davis Hawaii game on Saturday, I think, was probably the most intriguing game of the weekend.
Totally.
Hawaii was without Steptoe. He was out hurt. Davis went to the island and gave them a really good game, and it was a really hard fought game. It was scrappy at times, but Hawaii was able to pull out the win at the end. I think it was a great win for Hawaii to be able to do that without Steptoe. They had some guys step up at the end and play fairly well. Mike Thomas actually didn't have a great game, but they had some other guys, Sharif Ramey and some other guys that did play well. But I was actually almost just as impressed with Davis, just because to go to the islands and to compete as closely as they did, I thought was a good sign for them as well. So
yeah, I kind of took it the opposite, honestly. Like, I think,
oh really?
I think Davis had a real opportunity to kind of step on the gas, and that's kind of what we've seen, is that, you know, Fullerton kind of jumped out to the early lead in the conference. And then teams, you know, kind of have, they've lost a couple in a row now, I think. What are they, like 3-2 or 4-2, yeah, and two, something like that at this point. And then, you know, you kind of saw Davis kind of say, okay, we beat Irvine, because Davis beat Irvine in Irvine, I believe. And so yeah, Davis is like, okay, you know, maybe we're the big shots because we beat Irvine and Irvine. And all of a sudden then they go to Hawaii and lose, and all of a sudden Hawaii is the guy standing now. So, you know, I think we've gone through, you know, some of those iterations. And the team that really, to me, has, I don't know, impressed this week is Long Beach State. I talked about them.
Sure.
I talked about Gabe Levin. You know, that's a team that nobody talked about in the preseason. I think, what were they, like preseason in the middle of the pack in terms of the Big West?
Yeah, and they played that same schedule they always play, where they were going around and getting, you know, beat over the head for money and that kind of thing.
They lose my favorite point guard in the Big West, which was Justin Bibbins, who went to Utah. I think he grad transferred there maybe. So now you look up and all of a sudden this Long Beach State team, I think, only has one loss in conference so far. They beat somebody good. Did they beat Fullerton, I think, this week? And
they beat Fullerton on Saturday. Yeah, they did, like you said.
And they play Irvine as well, maybe?
Davis, but they lost to Irvine to start in the second game of conference play. But this weekend they lost to Davis, but they did have that impressive win at home against Fullerton.
Yeah, and they lost to Davis in Davis. And they lost to Davis in, yes, Davis, which is a hard place to play. I think Davis has one of the longest home winning streaks in the country right now, because of how good they've been. So, you know, losing to Davis up there isn't the worst thing in the world. You know, losing a home game would have been much worse than that at the Pyramid. But, you know, Long Beach State has solidified themselves kind of as pack runners and as real contenders too, I think, when it comes down to it. So, you know, whether you're talking about Long Beach State, Fullerton, you know, Irvine, I think, is probably the team that I would probably, if I was doing power rankings, would probably move down into the 5 or 6 range after this week, just because I don't, you know, after the last 2 weeks, I guess I should say, just because I think they're real young, and I don't know how much, like, how great I feel about them, even, you know, after the Cal Poly game, and they laid the wood on Cal Poly in terms of size. But I think a lot of Big West teams can match up against that, where they, sure, maybe didn't, they didn't used to be able to. In the Mamadou days, you know, there was no Jalen Canty, I don't think. There wasn't a Chima Moneki, unless his name was Chris Eversley, or somebody who can kind of be a mid-range guy, you know, just kind of a dominant inside presence that wasn't him. So, you know, I think well, Irvine has a host of inside players now. The Big West also has kind of stepped up in terms of its size with a lot of teams, and they're able to be inside presences and kind of compete with that. And, you know, even if there's some teams that have a harder time with that, like Cal Poly, for example. So, you know, in terms of like who I feel really good about right now, I still feel really good about Santa Barbara, because I don't know if they're going to lose at home in conference again. I still feel, you know, I still feel pretty good. I feel better about Hawaii than I did. I think they're, you know, Aaron Gannat maybe has, you know, some under the radar guys who are, you know, competing every night. When they play more games off the island, let's see how they do. And then, like I said, Long Beach State's kind of on the up. Fullerton kind of lost a little bit of shine in terms of their start, but they're beastly every game, and they're going to be in every game because of the way that they play. So, you know, I don't know. What do you have any other thoughts in terms of some of those teams and what they did this past week?
I think that's pretty close to what I am. You know, like I said, I do feel like those six have separated themselves. I still think that Davis and Santa Barbara are a couple ticks ahead of the other four. But I do think that it's any of those six teams battle to win the conference regular season title. I think coming up for this weekend, you know, I always like to look ahead and see what team has the most to prove this weekend. And I think that that team this weekend is Fullerton. As you mentioned, for a little bit, they were first place in the conference. Now Hawaii has the one loss and Fullerton has two. But Fullerton has a couple of interesting games. They host Santa Barbara on Thursday, which will be a really interesting game for both teams.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Can Fullerton, you know, and what's weird about those two teams as opposed to the other four is I feel like with Long Beach and Irvine and Hawaii and Davis, that the defense kind of leads the offense. Those four teams like kind of rely on their defense. They all have guys that can score. But in order to win, they have to have good defensive efforts. Whereas Fullerton and Santa Barbara, I think the offense is a little bit ahead of the defense for both of those teams. Huh. They all have really explosive scores. Santa Barbara obviously does it in a little bit different way than Fullerton, where they'll shoot from the outside with Heidegger and those guys, although they do have Canty inside. Whereas Fullerton wants to get to the basket with Allman and Jackson Rowe and those guys. But I think that's going to be a really, you know, kind of styles make fights intriguing matchup on Thursday with Fullerton hosting Santa Barbara.
You said, and then, I'm going to jump in really quick. You said styles make fights, and I think that's exactly Fullerton and Santa Barbara. I mean, it's so true because, you know, can Canty keep himself from fouling Allman? What happens when Allman jumps into Canty? Can Canty stay vertical or King, for example? How is Allman going to play against some of those, you know, bigger but maybe not quite fleet as foot guards on Santa Barbara? Like, who's going to guard Kyle Allman Jr.? Who's going to guard Khalil Ahmad, like, off the dribble? Like, I just don't know. I mean, Santa Barbara's going to have a good game plan for that, or maybe just sag a ton and see what happens. But yeah, I mean, the styles, and that's one of the most fun things, and that's why the wrestler analogy came up for me, was just because styles are so different, and it's all about who's matched up with who, right? So, like, you know, when you play Irvine, you know what you're going to get in terms of size. When you play Davis, you know you're going to get, like, fundamental basketball with Chima, you know, going to work. When you play Santa Barbara, you know you're going to get, you know, a steady dose of Canty inside, Heidegger outside. Gabe Vincent, like, finally found his rhythm, which is scary to think about, that he's their fourth leading scorer. I think he had 21 in that big win for them. We know what you're going to get from Fullerton. I've talked at length about them. Hawaii is still kind of the lesser known to me. And as time goes on, maybe that's good for them, you know, to be able to fly under the radar, but they're straight up in first place right now in the conference. And I know I forgot somebody. I know I forgot a team called Long Beach. Long Beach.
Talked previously has got Gabe Levin and kind of a host of other guys that kind of, Youssef and Albert, too, unfortunately, is out right now, but some other guys.
Yeah. So keep going. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt, but the styles make fights thing.
It leads into my next point, because for Fullerton, it's going to be real tough. They're going to have that big battle against Santa Barbara, which I believe is a TV game. It's at 7:30 on Thursday. And then Saturday, they actually, once they get done playing Santa Barbara, they get on a plane and fly out to Hawaii, and they have to play on the islands on Saturday night.
Okay.
Which, again, it's going to be a real interesting matchup because, you know, Hawaii has that, you know, the taller lineup. Can Fullerton get to the basket against them? Can Hawaii make Fullerton shoot from the outside? Right. So I think this weekend is going to be kind of the weekend where we see can Fullerton make the leap and compete with Davis and Santa Barbara and make a run at the conference title. We're also going to learn a lot about the two teams that they're playing, Hawaii. You know, Hawaii hosting Fullerton is going to be a big challenge for them, even on the islands. And then Santa Barbara having to go down to Fullerton, that will be an intriguing game as well. So
yeah, that Hawaii
I'm really looking forward to.
That Hawaii matchup might not be good for Fullerton, but it might also be really good. Like, it just in terms of Hawaii kind of can play a little bit loose sometimes. They can turn the ball over a little bit.
Sure.
Fullerton's been really tight so far, what I've seen. You know, in terms of being able to kind of run their stuff. And the thing that I look at is, you know, can Hawaii's athletic, you know, wing defenders, whether it's Sharif or whoever, you know, kind of keep up with Fullerton's athletic drivers, their slashers.
Yeah,
and can they keep them off of Jack Purchase or, you know, whoever's going to be kind of patrolling the center you know, in the 4 and the 5 for Hawaii. How much can Fullerton actually continue to spread the floor? Jackson Rowe making threes is a big part of that, and Khalil Ahmad making threes, you know, just enough threes to keep him off the scent is a big deal.
Yeah,
there,
that's
especially
the thing about both those teams. Neither one of them really like to shoot from threes, and they're not great 3-point shooting teams, but they do have guys that will shoot it, and it totally helps space the floor, I think, for both those teams. So,
all right. So big week coming up in the Big West again. You know, check it out. You can kind of bookmark the Big West TV feed. ESPN3's been doing a really good job with Sam Farber and Courtney Sweet, and the coach was on there too this week. So, you know, a lot of enthusiasm, and you know, people who are running those feeds. I was actually kind of frustrated on the Cal Poly at Irvine feed. It seemed like it was like cutting out every
few
seconds. Yeah,
they had technical difficulties. Yeah.
I'm gonna blame Russell Turner specifically and personal. It was at Irvine, and those Big West people do a really good job of running those things, and I'm sure it's something that they'll get worked out. It was obviously worked out in the CSUN game, and I love being able to watch it on high def when I can't make it down. So
it's fantastic. Yeah. I mean, the internet streams are great, but being able to fire up that Watch ESPN app and get that going, it's
solid.
It's fantastic.
So there's your plug for those guys, and plug also, I want to say, last week I actually did spend about a half hour talking to Trent Rush, who's the Irvine play-by-play guy. He's been on ESPN3 and he still does some games there, along with Fox Sports, and Trent was kind enough to spend a little bit of time with me, and my memory card went ahead and decided it was time to go the way of all things, right afterwards. So, or maybe during, I'm not sure, but didn't.
All right, be memory card.
That one was out of there. So we're fired up here, and we're hopefully going to have Trent on maybe before Cal Poly hosts Irvine in a few weeks here. Also, Ghazal Hassan is somebody who I'm going to try to get on, hopefully leading up to the next CSUN game when he's here in SLO with the Matadors. Nick, I think it's time for the Nick Wynn cool stuff of the week segment stuff.
Yeah, I can't call it the Nito stat of the night because Ernie Johnson's got that trademark, but the fantastic trivia of the week for the Bird and the Breeze podcast. So there was some scrappy play over this last weekend, both in the Big West, and what really kind of got me thinking about this was in the NBA. There was some scrappiness, some guys getting into fights in locker rooms, Chris Paul trying to break into a Clipper locker room.
Yep.
So I wanted to know, who are the bad boys of the Big West?
Ooh.
Who are the guys who cause a lot of trouble in the Big West? So with the help of the fantastic collegebasketballreference.com, unfortunately, they do not track coach technicals. So I can tell you the coach technicals, which
let me just say, in terms of coach technicals, let me speak from experience, from somebody who sits right there. There are some coaches who get after it in the Big West, and some of the guys have kind of changed. So when I first started covering stuff, Dan Munson would just be insane to refs, and now he's more just insane straight to his team versus being insane to refs. Reggie Theus came in pretty hot too his first couple years. I remember when Cal Poly played them when they were pretty good, and Theus would be, you know, real loud, real demonstrative, using whatever kind of language you wanted to. He's definitely mellowed out a little bit.
You mentioned it, Russell Turner definitely has a distinctive voice. Like, you can hear on the feed him yelling at the refs because he's got that
hey
timbre.
Yeah, he's got, like, it's like a little bit raspy, but it carries. It's a coach voice, to be sure.
Choose Sergeant Slaughter for Irvine because he has a Sergeant Slaughter kind of voice.
Yeah, but Irvine has all the big guys, so they have to be big boss man. I mean, they just have to be.
That's true.
Brad Green, Rutherford, those other two guys, you know, it's just like, oh yeah, Galloway. It's just like they're huge, man. They still are. They lost Mamadou and freaking Demacopoulos, and they're still the biggest team in the conference. All right, go ahead. What's your who did you find out? Go ahead.
There are the career leaders right now in the Big West for technical fouls.
For players.
There are three players each who have three technical fouls in their career.
Okay. And do you want me to guess?
And obviously, you're not going to guess this right off the top of your
head. I'm going to guess one of them, I think.
Okay.
Gabe Levin?
Gabe Levin actually is not on this list.
He's
honestly
not.
He has one.
Really?
He's
okay.
Not on this list.
He's drawn quite a few in his career. That's part of the fun of Gabe Levin is that you know, he's definitely not afraid to mix up. Okay, so it's not Gabe. We want to think about players who've been in the league for a little while. I don't really see Cal Poly guys getting a lot of technicals very often.
As of right now, Cal Poly only has two guys in their career who have gotten a technical, and there's one each.
Yeah.
And, for these two.
Yeah. So
we'll get to that in a second.
I think Josh Martin might be one of those. All right. But when we're coming to the Big West in general, three each. Okay. So I don't know how much Sharif has played, but he comes off as a guy who probably might get some technicals. He jaws a lot. He does a lot of talking.
He does.
And I think he
got one this weekend for throwing the ball off the face of, I want to say, TJ Shorts. But as far as I can tell, that was the only one that he's ever got.
Really? Because that Cal Poly game, he was super chippy. Okay.
There is a Hawaii guy on this list.
Is it Purchase?
No.
Is it? It's not the little guy, right? It's not the.
No.
God. Oh, it's okay. It's the athletic guy, the guy who plays 3-4. His name is Thomas, maybe?
Yes, Mike Thomas has three technical fouls.
Okay, Mike Thomas. Okay, cool. That makes
sense. And now I'm looking for a Riverside player and a Davis player.
I mean, so the Davis player is either the tall center who wasn't playing for a little bit earlier this year. He's super athletic. He might be number zero. I don't know.
That is not, it's not him.
Oh, is it Chima?
No, it's not Chima either.
Oh, it's Siler Schneider.
It's Siler Schneider.
I love how I need three. Redhead. I love how I need three guesses at each one from each team. So I'm like, is it this guy? Nope. Is it this guy? No. Oh, it's this guy. Yeah. Okay, cool. And then Riverside, Alex Larson.
No.
Oh, Dikembe Martin.
Yeah, it is not. No.
Okay. Actually, I told you I need three. I told you I need three on each one.
Yes.
Shoot, I'm trying to picture other Riverside players who've played very much. Nick Wynn. This is a tough quiz today.
It is there one of their shooting guards, and the crazy thing about it is he's only a sophomore and he's already got three technical fouls.
Is it the guy who's like scoring a lot lately?
I think so, maybe. You know anyone know? It's DJ Sylvester.
Yeah, DJ Sylvester. Yeah. He's been scoring a lot lately. He's actually averaging like 20 points over the last week, I think, a week or two. So
is it? Yeah. Alex Larson does have two.
Yeah, okay. Okay.
From Riverside. Chance Murray, also from Riverside, has two. Khalil Ahmad has two.
Ahmad only has two, too. Wow.
And Alex Harris from Fullerton also has two.
Alex Harris is no longer. Alex Harris isn't on their team, is he? Wait.
Oh, is he? Is he gone?
Was I thinking of a different player? Maybe Alex Harris is the guy. I thought I was picturing somebody different. Maybe Alex is still there. I'm sorry, Alex.
No, you're right. No, I'm sorry. I screwed up. I thought I removed everyone that wasn't on their team, but you're right. Alex Harris is not on the team. So scratch that. Alex Harris is not there.
Okay.
But from Long Beach, KJ Byers and Timothy Youssef also have two technical fouls.
Interesting. So okay.
Those are the next list. Now, do you? You guessed Josh Martin for Pauly, and at least as far as my records on
nothing. TV, he's clean.
He is clean.
Okay.
But do you know the two Cal Poly players that have technical fouls?
I feel like there was a game when one of them got into it with somebody else, and I'm trying to picture it.
We discussed him earlier.
Yeah, it's Kuba, maybe?
Kuba does have a technical foul.
Yeah, Kuba has a technical. And
the other one you would never know.
Is it did Alex get a technical or somebody like that?
Yeah, Alex Abrams has a technical.
Do you like how I knew that? Yeah, Alex. And I bet that's like a flagrant, right? It's one of those ones where probably he got, you know, that kind of counts as a technical, but it was trying to
block somebody or
it was like a flagrant two,
right.
Yeah. It was like a elbow or something that probably technically is a technical foul, but it wasn't like he was yelling at the refs or something, because Alex doesn't do that kind of crap.
No, because I don't picture Alex Abrams jawing at people. So. Right.
Yeah. And you don't really picture anybody on Cal Poly, and it's one of the things that makes that team kind of fun. But again, like there's that balance too, and the last Cal Poly winning team, you know, is a team that that I've been told had some guys on it who were kind of a-holes sometimes. So you know, that's just the way that's the way that cookie crumbles sometimes when you got competitive guys. And maybe Yeah, I don't know. I'm not saying guys have to be jerks to be winners, because the team that went to the tournament, I don't think had too many. But But yeah, there's a balance there, right, in terms of attitude and in terms of.
Although I will say, you know, the last player I can think of who kind of had a little bit of an attitude on the court was Rhys Morgan.
Interesting.
So,
but he found a way to.
I got the impression of Rhys.
Yeah,
he wasn't chippy, and he wasn't kind of a dirty player. No,
it was chippy, and it was a little dirty on the court, but it was on the court, right? You would never have known
it.
He was able to turn it off and turn it on, and I don't know that some of those guys have learned that skill yet to kind of turn that off and turn it on and go back and forth. It's interesting.
Sure.
Yeah. Okay. Cool. Well, that was Nick's Neato Stat of the Week. Neato Stat of the Week.
Yes.
Da, da, da. All right.
sponsored by the Harlem Globetrotters, coming February 19th, President's Day, to Rabobank Arena. Harlem Globetrotters. Buy your tickets at RabobankArena.com. That's our first ever ad read.
Rabobank Arena. Yeah. We know some people from there, and good place to watch an event, including the Globetrotters. And if you're in the Baco area, make it happen and tell Nick Wynn, you know, tweet at him that you're going to go.
Ask for the Nick Wynn discount.
The Nick Wynn discount. Is that more or less than regular price? That's the question.
Yeah, it's a grand total of $0.
Yet to be seen, yet to be heard.
But I will say hi.
Yeah. Nick will come. Yeah, yeah. If you're a fan of Burn the Breeze and you're at the Globetrotters, you got to let Nick know. Upcoming week should be good times. I hope you all enjoyed our podcast. It's been a couple weeks. Like I said, I had a little card failure last week. But for Nick, I'm Owen. Nick, where can you find you?
Say hi to me on Twitter at Nick Wynn, at Nick Wynn, NICKWYNNE.
WYNNE, like Marvell, who is currently unemployed.
Yes.
Which is a weird story if you're a soccer fan. You can find me at
Marvell Jr., my cousin.
What's shut up?
He is
not your cousin.
Distant cousin.
No, not at all. Yeah. And we have you can follow me at Fansmanship. You can follow me on Twitter at Fansmanship. You can follow me on Instagram at Fansmanship, where you can find some sweet photos all over the place. If you have any ideas, thoughts, comments, questions, email them in, owen@fansmanship.com. So for Nick, I'm Owen, and we'll catch you next week on the Burn the Breeze edition of the Fansmanship podcast.
Hey, thanks for listening to the Fansmanship Podcast. For more podcasts and more in-depth sports discussion, go to fansmanship.com.
Well, I've been stuck on down in Trouble Town. It's a lonely place, it's true. Street lights so bright, they blind my vision. The people on the streets, they beat me up till I'm black and blue.